time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oniroa. Last Saturday, I talked to Rebecca Armstrong from Waiheke Coast Guard, Lisa Smith from Piritahi Ho Order, the organiser of the Marae's Waitangi Day celebrations. Opinionated Islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, and daughter Ray from the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust. Good morning, Rebecca Armstrong from Waiheke Coast Guard.
Good morning.
Let's see, there we go, let's try that again.
Good morning.
That's it. Now I've got you. Hey, it's time for our monthly look at water safety and boating safety with Waiheke Coast Guard. So welcome along.
Thank you.
Now, the other day I was on the ferry and we were sailing past Bean Rock and the ferry was kind of starting and stopping and starting and stopping. And, you know, I looked out and there were a lot of windsurfers. Seemed to be quite young kids out on the windsurfers having a race. And so, you know, there we were. We wanted to get home. But no, we had to stop and start. And that's what we're going to talk about today, isn't it? About giving
Absolutely.
Way and
about the rules of the road. Yeah.
So why did the ferry have to stop?
Well, technically power gives way to sail. So in a sailboat, if you've ever been in a sailboat or a windsurfer, they're harder to control. So power usually has to give way to sail. Although in saying that, if you do a boatmaster's course or a day skipper, they usually say give way to the ferry because they are bigger. They're also quite difficult to stop in time and things like that. So if you are aware that you're going through an area where the ferry is, I would actually look and see whether the ferry's coming before you go across it.
There does seem to be some people who are quite oblivious. I mean, other times of, you know, the ferry's come right down to a stop and come up and there's a little boat, you know, tinny or something sitting in the ferry channel and someone's kind of fishing away and kind of turn around and go, oh, there's a 500-ton white thing behind me.
Yeah, it's generally recommended to keep out of those ferry lanes, and they're fairly obvious, particularly around Motutapu and coming up to Waiheke. There's the yellow buoys, so the ferry can go on either side of those buoys, so the idea is to actually keep well away from those buoys.
So what kind of distance from either side should you be staying out of?
I would look at about 200 metres.
Right, okay, well that's fairly big.
Yeah.
Fairly big chunk.
You don't really want to be closer than 200 metres to a ferry going at 25 knots.
Yeah, I suppose the suspicion that people have is that the fish are clever enough to swim through the ferry channel, but no, folks, they're not.
No, they're not. And I think the misconception out there is that you can just go to the one side of those ferry channel markers as well, and technically the ferry can use both sides.
Okay, so motor gives way to sail.
Yep.
And but okay, we've got two motored boats coming close to each other. What happens then?
So you can treat motored boat, if you're coming up against a motor boat, and it's sort of like a roundabout situation if you're driving in your car in New Zealand. So if you would normally give way at a roundabout in that same situation, so the car's coming from your right, you give way with motor as well.
Okay, so just, there we go, give way to the right.
Yep.
That's nice, that's and easy right. to remember.
Yeah, it is easy.
Yeah, so same rules on the way to the boat ramp and then out on the water.
Yep.
Good stuff. Okay, and anything else that people need to know about what to keep out of the way of or when they slow down rather than the other boat?
You need to be aware that within 50 metres of another boat, within 200 metres of shore, within 200 metres of like tankers, that sort of thing, that you need to actually keep below 5 knots, otherwise you're actually breaking the law technically.
And well, that 200 metres thing, that rule must get broken all the time.
Oh, regularly. Yes. Yeah. We see it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, all those boats, I mean, you never see a boat unless it's someone rowing it, you know, that's down at that speed.
No, you do, and particularly from other boats, I think, because if you create a wake that upsets other boats, that can be quite difficult if you're going slow or you're stopped or you're anchored to manage in that wake.
Yeah. And what about at this time of year when boats are coming into the bays and into the beaches and there are people in there, you know, there might be people swimming, and people swim quite a distance off the shore. So what should boaties be doing then?
If you're coming right up to the shore, I would recommend using a ski lane or where the jetty is, sort of where the ramps are. People expect boats to be coming in and out of ramps, and on beaches where there is a ski lane, they also know the swimmers are actually not allowed to swim between those two markers. So they're orange and black markers, and you can just go in and out of those. As far as skiing goes, you're actually allowed above 5 knots within 200 metres of the shore on those ski lanes, yep, so that you can drop your people off and start.
Have you found that with the advent of things like sea legs, so people can kind of basically go in and out of the water wherever they want rather than using ramps, that they kind of forget that there's other users in the water at the beach?
I haven't seen it so much. The ones that I've seen launching have been pretty good. They've always been going down the ramps as well. So, yeah, I haven't seen any problems, but I'm sure the temptation is there to go in anywhere you like.
Yeah. Okay, and so, you know, we talked before about the dude who's out fishing and by himself and completely oblivious to what's going on around. But what are the rules for looking out and kind of being attentive to what's going on?
As a skipper of a boat, you are by law required to have a lookout, a good lookout. So it's usually best to have someone else there. And that means looking behind as well, looking to the side. You need to be looking out for people, for other boats, for kayaks, things like that you might miss, and bigger boats that would be coming in that might be restricted in their manoeuvrability, so that you've got enough warning to get out of the way, sort of thing.
And so if you're on your own, how do you maintain that kind of lookout?
Just remember to look around. You got behind as well. I think the main thing is looking behind as well. You don't know what's going to overtake you or anything like that, what's coming up behind.
Do boats have rear vision mirrors?
No. Well, most don't. I know we do at the boat, and our boat we do. Yep. And that's mainly to monitor the engines and things, though.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, and you wanted to touch on just a couple of the basics around life jackets?
Yep. So there are four sort of basic life jacket types you can get. There's a buoyancy vest, there's an inshore life jacket, an inflatable life jacket, and offshore life jackets. Now, what's important to remember as well is that only inflatable and offshore life jackets are actually designed to turn someone up the right way, so face up out of the water if someone is unconscious. So when you're purchasing a life jacket for your boat, it's quite good to keep that in mind. Now, the offshore life jackets are what are similar to what Fuller's Ferries all have. They're quite big and bulky. I know we've all seen them, and people sort of a bit put off by that. Now, if you are put off by that, but you are concerned about safety, particularly if you've got younger people on board, you know, you think, well, you know, what happens if they are unconscious or something? It's best to have an inflatable life jacket. Now, they come in two types. They're the ones that are really thin. You hardly notice that you're wearing them. Now, and they come in two types. You can either have one that is self-activated, where you pull a string and it blows up when you need it, or you can have one that's activated by water. So if someone ends up in the water, that jacket will activate.
Right, but it's not going to go off when a wave comes up over the side and splashes them?
It might. Now, that's the downside to those ones. We have had a Coast Guard crew that accidentally had one set off in the boat once, which was interesting. So that's a downside to those inflatable ones. So as a Coast Guard unit, we all have the pull string ones, and knowing that if someone goes in the water, someone else is probably going to dive in after them if they look like they're unconscious or something. So it's a risk you take with those ones. But they, you know, if you are wanting to wear something all the time but don't want the bulk of the offshore life jacket, then that's a better way to go.
Yeah. And do they have a life?
Yes, you need to be regularly inspecting your life jackets for any wear and tear, and in particular with the inflatable ones as well, you also need to inspect the canister, the little gas canister that will inflate it, for any corrosion and things.
Great, yeah, and I imagine there's a fair few life jackets that get sold with boats that have been around for quite a while.
Yeah, we've seen quite a number of older style life jackets, or older type life jackets that are not really suitable anymore. So they are getting cheaper and cheaper. They are recommended to be worn at all times in a boat under 6 metres, except for if you're in a cabin. There are some law changes that might be coming out. Maritime are looking at making that compulsory, whereas it's just recommended at the moment. It's not compulsory, except for the skipper is responsible for anyone in the boat. And if they deem that a life jacket is necessary because of, you know, rough seas or poor vision or night time or any time when there's risk, then you have to wear that life jacket.
Okay, and if people want to get hold of Waiheke Coast Guard, how do they do that?
You can email us on waihekecoastguard@hotmail.com.
Great. Rebecca Armstrong from Waiheke Coast Guard. Thank you very much. All right, well, the 6th of February, of course, is Waitangi Day, and one of the most important days in New Zealand, an annual holiday, which you miss out on this year because it's the Saturday. But down in Blackpool, in Te Huruhi Bay, you'll find Piritahi Marae, which is the scene of a lot of goings-on Waitangi Day, and here to talk about that is Lisa Smith from Piritahi Hauora. So how are you, Lisa?
Kia ora, Chris. Yes, I'm well, thanks.
So you work for the Hauora, which is the health service yes. based at the Marae, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a health clinic, and we offer free medical care to anyone we can, anyone that turns up on our doorstep. If you have especially if you have a community services card, and the costs are drastically subsidised, even if you don't. So, yeah.
But somehow under your umbrella, you're also responsible for organising what happens at Piritahi Marae on the 6th of February.
I am, and Piritahi Hauora holds a contract, a Ministry of Social Development contract called the Te Rito Strategy, and my role with that is coordinator for raising awareness and prevention of family violence. And the family day that we're having on Waitangi Day comes under that umbrella because it's all about making time for families to come together and spend quality time together for free. So, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money to spend quality time with your children. And we've also, there's a strong correlation between families that play together, stay together, and also it keeps us connected with the rest of our community. And there's a lot of community organisations that are going to be there. Living Without Violence, Waiheke Health Trust, Budgeting Services, Adult Literacy, WICOS, and we've got a guest, Tamaki Health, who are coming over to promote some diabetes information and education. That's just the stalls. We've also got lots of local entertainment. Vanessa Grant, she was a Waiheke Idol winner. Feigned Innocence, which is a band fronted by Ben Cutter. We've got Mel Davis, who is, you might have heard her performing around different bars on the island. She's got a beautiful voice. And we've actually got some people coming from over in Auckland. We've got children's activities. We've got waka ama. We've got a treaty workshop. We've got raranga and poi workshop. The wakas will be going out. Probably we'll try to get in at least 4 rides a day. So all these activities are free. So it's about coming and participating and putting your name down. And especially for the waka ama, you come up, sign up, and then you go through a whole lot of safety teachings, and then you're out on the water. And we've got really experienced paddlers and steerers, so that's the waka ama.
So this kind of activity where you're bringing people in and showing them how they can live a healthy lifestyle and get on together, you obviously have a pretty holistic approach to healthcare and well-being.
We do, and the kaupapa of Piritahi Hauora supports that because we also hold the HIHA contract, which is healthy eating, healthy activity, and the coordinator for that is Trisha Pullum. And we've actually taken on that kaupapa at the Hauora ourselves. We, you know, we're Owahi Kore, and we run a comprehensive smoking cessation course, which staff have had a lot of progress with, and yeah. And Trisha is very active in the community, promoting healthy eating and healthy activity. We support that kaupapa at the Hauora, so
So how did it come together that this kind of, I suppose, you know, family wellbeing day coincides with Waitangi Day? What brings the two together in your mind?
For me personally, for a person to be whole and healthy, every aspect has to be addressed. And one of the things too around Waitangi Day for me is about healing a people from many different aspects. And it starts with the individual and then it just moves out. And so I think the two of them go together really well.
Mm. And Piritahi Marae is, well, I mean, the way the marae is set up, isn't it, is for the people of the island. It's not a tangata whenua marae.
Yeah, it is. And we've got, at the moment, it's being dressed. We've got the inside has been painted and designed by Mike Wilson, and it's absolutely stunning. We've got all the carvings being done at the moment, and our carver, Tuko, he's going to be there on Waitangi Day for... He's going to be carving, but he's also going to be available to talk to people just about what he's doing and everything like that. Yeah, so, yeah, looking forward to it.
So do you find that many people, that Waitangi Day is the only time they come to the marae, or do people pick up on some of those programs that you're promoting there and become more involved, and you get more community involvement as a result of this?
I think this is probably one of the main times that a lot of people come to the marae. But it's about breaking down those barriers so that they feel comfortable to come there more often, and that's what we'd really like to see, you know, more community participation, because we do run a lot of community activities out of the marae or around the Hauora and the Kohanga building. Yeah.
Yep. And are there any aspects of the day that directly address the treaty and relationships between, you know, the Crown of Māori or Pākehā of Māori?
Definitely. We've got a treaty workshop on. It starts at 11:15. They usually run for around an hour and a half.
That's not long to talk about the treaty.
No, but what... Because Peter Ricky's is the... kaiako that's going to be taking that... holding that workshop, and what he's found is that he just goes with the crowd if they want to talk about it, and he's definitely stayed there longer debating and talking and explaining, and so he's all about helping people understand and educate and just explain finer points of the treaty and all the issues that come up with it. Mm.
Good stuff. And so you get started at what time and finish at what time?
Porfiti's at 10:30. All the activities start at 11, and we've got the hāngi coming up at 1 o'clock, that's when it's due, and we should be winding down anywhere around 3:30.
Mm. So for a lot of people, stepping onto a marae is perhaps something they approach with trepidation if they haven't done it before.
This is the perfect opportunity, because there's going to be a lot of people there, and it really is the perfect opportunity to be welcomed onto the marae, because, and this is something that I'm encouraging all my friends that haven't been to the marae to try and do, is once you've been welcomed onto the marae, you can go there at any time you like. You're welcome to come onto the marae and for whatever purpose. Until then, you need to be welcomed on.
So your porphyry's at 10:30. So yes. What about for those people who can get along later in the day?
Oh, it's open to them as well. Yeah, they're more than welcome. Everybody's welcome. That's the official part, is our porphyry at 10:30.
Excellent. Mm. And if people are hungry?
We've got some healthy snacks there in the during the day, and then the hāngi at 1 o'clock. That's going to be $10 a ticket.
Great. Well, thanks very much, Lisa, and I hope you have a great day. It's the first Saturday of the month, and as we do each first Saturday of the month, I'm joined in the studio by our opinionated islanders. Welcome along, Alan Knight.
Good morning.
And Alex Stone.
Hi, how are you? I'm into some new dialogue, just like Julia.
Yeah, well, and today we thought we'd take a look at Waiheke events, or events held on Waiheke.
Yes, yeah. Been quite an interesting year for seeing some of these events rising and falling.
Yeah, which ones fell?
Well, I mean, last year the wine festival was a complete disaster. The reverberations of that went on for weeks.
Yeah.
The whole event was just according to everyone who went, it was just ghastly. The security was heavy-handed. Somebody was telling me this morning there was one security guard who was actually picking fights with people. And
there was that issue with no one could drink water.
Yeah, that was just ridiculous.
I reckon we could bottle and sell Waiheke water. You know, the stuff that falls from the sky. It's better than Auckland stuff.
Well, yes, they have this thing, you know, it's common that, you know, anyone who goes to rock concerts will know that water is confiscated from you. You cannot bring it in because it might be vodka. But it's also the fact that if they confiscate the water from you, you've got to buy it inside, thus maximizing your fleecing. Yeah. And there was this feeling, I think, from most of the people I talked to from the wine festival last year, who felt that the organisers hadn't even bothered to conceal that. It's like, yep, come on, roll up, folks. Turn your pockets out. We're going to fleece you of absolutely everything. Do you get a good time? Actually, we don't care. That seemed to be the thing. Now, I hope whoever's doing it this year has taken all that on.
Yeah, because we should note that it is a different organiser this year.
I think there's a lot to learn from these wine festivals. It always disappointed me how the Devonport Wine Festival started off as a kind of civilised affair. And within a few years, it became totally pissed 20-somethings puking in the pavements, you know. Why is it that we can't keep something civilized for any length of time?
Or indeed stop it from being taken over by people who aren't interested in whether you have a good time there or not.
Yeah.
For me, I think one of the great examples would be the beach races. Now, when I first came to the island, the beach races were very much a local business.
Yeah, they were good fun.
It was a lot of fun to go down to the beach races. And then it went through this phase where all of a sudden it felt like there were other people taking it over with their own ideas of how to make it run. And there were corporate hospitality tents getting in the way. Parts of the beach you couldn't even go to because they were all cordoned off. And it's like, well, you can't come in here. You're not influential enough to be in this tent.
You're not a real estate agent. Get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a lot of people stopped going. Oh, no, I'm not going to that thing. It's just awful. And then last year, they suddenly, well, Janice Reeve. Thank you, Janice. She sorted it out. And all of a sudden last year, it was a good event again. It felt like it had something going for it. And, of course, also, it's the kind of event where if you don't want to spend any money, you don't have to.
Yeah,
you can still go along. You can still spend the whole day there, have a great time, and not spend a cent.
Yeah. But I think you picked up on something interesting there, Alan, is that with a lot of these events, the people that live here tend to be sidelined. I feel a bit peripheral to them. I didn't even know the wine festival was on this weekend. And somehow they advertised out there, and you know, the people that live on the island become bit players in these things with the visitors washing over us. And
of course, we have
they live at
Stony Ridge last week, which is another example of the you know, the big import of people.
There were some truly horrible people going into that venue. I was working next door at the brewery, and we were doing some sort of spare parking and letting people park cars there. And the amount of completely drunk, brainless bulk filler going into that place was just awful.
I feel sad for the old cannon fodder bimbos that come to Stony Ridge for each one of their dues.
Tottering up the gravel path on their high heel shoes with the enormous sunglasses.
Oh, bless their socks. I
saw someone describe it online. They said, I was on the Waiheke Ferry and it was full of supermodels with heels longer than their skirts.
I love it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's and a strange subversion of what's normally the image you want to portray with fine red wine. But then again, we know it's some kind of fantasy working elsewhere. You know, it's not exactly wine that is the main thing to be sold.
No, obviously
so,
not.
But, you know, these islands, okay, these events, people come to the island. They, you know, as you say, they're here to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
Is it good for the island that way?
Well, it is. I mean, let's get some of that Auckland money and get it sloshing around in our economy.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then, you know, put them back on the boat. Bye, thanks. If we have to put up with a few days like that over each summer, well, I guess we can live with it.
Yeah, I got no problem with it.
We are a tourist destination. And I think you can't whinge too much.
About reputation, though? You know, you have a couple of events where people get fleeced or it's very expensive. Yeah. And there's been word around the standard of holiday accommodation on the island and so on, and you kind of tend to get reputation,
like
don't you?
I like that. I think it's part of a great tradition with Waiheke. You see it happening in the restaurant trade. Is there some kind of Fawlty Tower-esque thing going down? It's like a self-balancing effect that we invite people here and then we give them such bad service that they go away with, you know, with a terrible experience, and then that kind of limits the numbers. Only the really, really staunch tourists come back, you know. So it's a way of weeding out the tourists, and it's a natural way of keeping the numbers down. You know, so this idea of bad service is kind of it's a natural balancing effect. Mm. You know,
I think the reputation for bad service on the island is sadly deserved. You go into a lot of these places, and I mean, if you're a local and they know you, then things can be friendly. But if you see the way that tourists are just sort of ignored, or you come in and sit down at a cafe, what do you want? that works out on barrier.
Yeah.
I mean, they're singularly unfriendly out on barrier. Even people from Waiheke are not welcome there. Yeah. I remember going there and I thought there'd be some fellow feeling because we were also Gulf Islands people. But, you're from Waiheke? Oh, right. You're going back soon, then? They really don't want to know about you on barrier, but that's fair enough, because, I mean, people go to barrier because they want to get away from people, and they certainly don't want people following them over there. Here, we do have a local economy that is based on at least being a little bit hospitable, so maybe we need to work harder on that.
Yeah. So what you mentioned the beach races before. What are the other local events that you like?
Trolley Derby.
I love the Trolley Derby is a great one. And one of my favourite event stories is the Wharf to Wharf a few years ago. It was a classic piece of Waiheke mismanagement. It was just wonderfully disastrous. They ran the race and they had three different races. There's the half distance and the quarter distance and whatever, and all the people arrived at the finish at the same time, and the organizers that particular year, bless their socks, had mixed up who was running which race. So at the prize giving, it was a wonderful Waiheke scene. There were these hundreds of people smilling around at the prize giving, and your man gets up and says, "We're not sure who won, so if you think you won the race, come on up and we'll give you the prize." And sure enough, there was a bit of dissension. Two blokes arguing over there.
I thought the Wharf to Wharf this year was really quite well done. I mean, we were down
I'm talking
there
about years ago.
Yeah, they really did seem to have a grip on it. Just to digress a bit, because I think it touches on what you were saying this week in your column about the happy attitude. There's something terribly hair shirt about the people that take part in the Wharf to Wharf. Now, we were set up there a couple of weeks ago doing the beer tent, because it's amazing how much beer these people do actually drink.
You mean once they've finished?
Once they've finished doing the whole hair shirt, mortifying the flesh run in the heat from all the way from Oropew. But I was struck by the difference in attitude and this sort of puritanical view that so many people have these days, which I think is just destroying us. There was a guy, and he must have been among the first 10 runners to come in. He'd run all the way. Skinny guy. No flesh on him whatsoever.
So you could have a beer. You could.
And he came staggering over to our tent, and he said, "Do you mind if I lie down in the shade?" And we, "No, fine, sit down, that's what it's for." Well, he collapsed, and then his eyes rolled back, and he started to convulse, and so we went and got the St. John's Ambulance people.
No amount of beer would have helped him then. Yeah.
And he was clearly in a very bad way. But this is the bit that I don't get. I mean, there are people who'll go out and do all these sort of harsh things like running, and when they get sick or injured as a result, they get lots of sympathy. Whereas people like myself, who like to stay up late in the pursuit of drinks and jokes and women and mischief, when we end up with a hangover or a liver that explodes, we get no sympathy at all. You brought it on yourself, you silly buggy. You shouldn't have done it. And yet, you do something as daft as running the length of the island in the heat, and you get sick, and everyone's sympathetic to you. I say you shouldn't have done it. You're an idiot. I felt like going over and smacking the guy.
Well, this year they even had the, you know, the Wharf to Wharf has got basically two halves to the run. There's the hilly bit and the straight bit from Onatangi. And it used to be the half race was the Onatangi bit to Matiete, but this year they gave you the first option as well. You could do the hard bit if you liked it.
And that is a hard bit. But you're involved with sports, aren't you, Alex? What do you think of that? Do you think that people deserve a slap when they exert themselves too hard, or do you?
No.
They certainly don't deserve sympathy.
They
deserve the same amount of sympathy that I deserve when I've got a hangover.
Yeah, well, I think Alan's. My point is that there's human folly everywhere, and marathon runners are probably as well served with their own lashings of folly as any of us. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a friend who's a GP down on the South Island. She was doing the doctor on site for the Buller Marathon one year when a 33-year-old mother of two staggered over the finish line and fell down dead.
Yeah, weird things that people want to do. But mostly our events aren't that intense.
You mentioned the trolley derby there.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Now, the trolley derby is a great local event. Yeah. You don't have to pay to go to it. There's a great deal of eccentric behaviour. It's a good island event.
Yeah.
There was a thing a few years ago when it all got taken over with the sponsorship from competing local newspapers, which sort of lowered the tone of it a little bit. But nowadays, it's just fantastic. Yeah, I love the trolley derby.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Santa Parade is another one. It's very similar.
Yep. Yeah. Very fine event.
The one thing that intrigues me is our events, apart from the beach races, we really don't use the beaches as well as we could. I think we could have a huge multi-sport event on the beaches. There's an interesting sport called Ultimate Frisbee. It's like combination of basketball, rugby, running, footy with a frisbee. Needs a big open area, and Onatangi would be a fantastic place for a great ultimate frisbee competition and a lot of drinking afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Could be an event we could do. Mm. I know there's a sort of hole in the events calendar in November. People say there's nothing that ever happens in November. So if we could think of something that, to fill our calendar in November.
Trouble with November is the weather's so unpredictable.
Yeah, yeah.
And
would you risk all that time and effort to get something going and then have November go November weatherish on you?
Yeah, yeah. But then, you could have your ultimate frisbee in the nude. Your skin's waterproof. That we would make the papers around the world if we had a nude ultimate frisbee or whatever.
Yeah, it'd be the sort of thing we'd do.
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Oh, now, here's another good local event, Show and Shine.
Yes.
Oh, you mean the car?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that was last weekend. It was a great day.
Yeah.
Modest admission fee that goes to a very, very good cause. And the Coast Guard, fine thing to raise money for.
Yeah.
The music was, by and large, pretty good this year. And there were twice as many of these weird and wonderful old cars. I'm not much of a car fan myself, but they were pretty spectacular.
Yeah, there were some big machines down there. Did you get a chance to see them, Alex?
No, I didn't. Where was I? I wasn't around last weekend. But, I wish them well. They're the petrol heads of the world. I feel like they're kind of a breed that will slowly disappear from our consciousness. But, wish them well.
Yes, until these cars can be converted to run on tofu or whatever dumb thing they're going to try and run stuff on. The only thing I found a little bit creepy this year, it's always been there in previous years, wherever you get these sort of hot rod, petrol head type people with the bizarre facial hair, is this nasty, aggressive American imagery. And maybe it's just that, we don't take America seriously anymore. They're not the superpower they once were. But I just turned up there last week and found all these Confederate flags and screaming eagles and U.S. Airborne and all these things. It's like, why are you people doing this? What inadequacy are you trying to compensate for?
Yeah, it's real tragic.
That you have to plaster the place with this increasingly annoying American imagery.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could become the venue for tragic events. We could become the last repository for all these tragic events, like you're talking about.
Yeah.
That could become our new brand.
But all these people, you're not wild Southern rebels. Get over it. You're from Auckland and your parents weren't related to one another.
Yeah.
You got an American car and a silly beard.
I really feel for the folks that grew up in Glenfield. They did start off with a disadvantage in life, say. Poor buggers.
There was an interesting mix of flags there, though, as you say. I mean, there was the Confederate flags and there was the eagle and all the rest of it. But mixed in amongst that were the flag of the United Tribes of Aotearoa from 1835, the Tena Rangatiratanga flag, the Union Jack.
Yeah.
It was a very strange mix.
Yeah. Interesting to see how far the old Tino Rangatira Tara flag goes this weekend. You know, it's having its showing this weekend.
Yeah, first official screening.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm sick of the whole thing. No flags. Let's get rid of flags entirely. They're too contentious.
That's an interesting point, yeah. What did all these empty flagpoles do?
Well, the Herald, of course, launched an attempt to make news rather than report it, launched a campaign for a new flag last week.
Yeah. And, well, it's just another of those things that they'll have all these commissions and inquiries and they'll spend a load of money and we'll end up with some tacky new flag and it won't make us any different. We won't be any freer, any richer. Just a bunch of people with silly priorities will get a chance to ventilate in public. Yeah. Big deal.
Yeah, well, the other option is we could keep our flag and ask the Australians to change theirs.
Well, I think they're only too keen to. They really want to.
Yeah, but I quite like the red, white, and black one. I think it's a very powerful design graphically, you know, and it stands out. I'd go with it, no problem. Yeah. If we could all learn to pronounce it.
Yes.
And if old Hone wouldn't make the money from it. He was going to copyright it and make money for himself out of it, but apparently that's all over now.
I don't know. I think adopting that would be probably premature. It's one of these things where I think that the current generation of Maori politicians who are pushing that flag, in another generation, those people are going to be viewed with great embarrassment by the next generation of Maori politicians. Just as the Scottish and Welsh politicians of the 60s and 70s are now considered incredibly embarrassing
by
the new generation who've actually got their act together and are doing useful things.
Yeah, I love that.
It's a natural progression. I think, you know, the idea of all the Harawiras and people, they're exactly right in saying what they're saying, and they are the right people at the right time. But I think they should prepare for the fact that the generation that follow them will view them with a certain amount of, oh, God.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I agree with you. The one truism that I always hold to with politics, which probably keeps it all in perspective, is that every political career ends in failure.
Yes.
So that just reminds you where we're going with the fellas that are leading us, you know, what their thinking is, you know. They'll always be discredited in the end.
So, yes, I think a move to any kind of flag right now, particularly when we're at such an intellectual low point.
Would be empty.
Yeah, I think it would be based on all the wrong ideas. Let's sort some other stuff out first, get some priorities here.
Yeah.
Who cares what the flag looks like?
Well, democracy, I think, should be our priority. My big concern in the last week was this Stalin-esque takeover of Totoki Reserve.
Yes, good point you brought that one up. Who on earth are the friends of Totoki who don't have dogs?
Yeah, one wonders, yeah. There's an interesting story. People, friends of Totoki, whoever they might be, have said those that walk dogs in the place won't be able to anymore unless the dog's on a lead, which is a pity because I would imagine the friends of Totoki would have been quite aghast at Bratnagar and Auckland City Council type strong arm tactics, and they're doing the same. How hard would it have been for them to talk to the major stakeholders, who are the dog walkers, and say, we're concerned about the wetland or the mangroves, which is fair enough. Let's go together and build a fence.
I'm still at a loss to understand what damage even a very large dog can do to a mangrove swamp.
Apparently there are banded rails, which is a little vulnerable bird living in the swamp. So I'm quite happy to build a fence. I'd pitch up and be part of the working bee.
Yeah. And hey, most dog owners, and I mean, you know, we're both dog owners and we both walk our dogs at Totoki. I'm desperate to keep my dogs out of the mangroves.
Yeah. Because but they do go sometimes.
You've got to go, because when you've got to get the dog back into the car or whatever or get it home smells. And it stinks of mangrove swamp and you've got to wash it off. I'm only too happy to keep them out of there. But I'm just confused as to who these friends of Totoki are.
Yeah, but this is the consultation. Don't have dogs. You know, who gave? Do they have the right to block a public space without talking to the people that use it the most?
Oh, I think that's my point. So how far is this obsession with banning things gone?
Yeah, I mean, how far has it gone? It's the idea has been suggested. Are we?
I think there's a sign up. I haven't been down lately. Have you, Alan?
I was there yesterday. I didn't see a sign.
So maybe it is just an idea. Maybe we're getting too het up already.
Maybe.
In advance.
That would be unlike you two.
We're touchy people, us dog owners.
Yeah. All right. So, plans for the rest of the day, gentlemen?
I'm going to go up and make sure that everything's working okay up at the Wine Festival. We're pouring beer there this year. They've actually let us back in.
And so this year we actually have some local stuff on sale there, which is nice.
Yes,
we're going to salute the flag. I think we should spend the rest of the day listening to New Zealand music. That's my plan.
Oh, we can do that.
And I'm also into some serious relaxing. I found it's my great talent in life. Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. The opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, joining us as they do on the first Saturday of every month here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio. Thank you very much.
Okay.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Oniroa.
It's time to talk to Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust. Good morning, Daughter.
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Now, you've got a lot on. You've got a busy program at the moment, haven't you?
I do, indeed. I've had a very busy morning. We've been setting up the Towards Zero Waste Management System at the Waitangi Day celebration down at the Marae.
So what does that involve, a Towards Zero Waste Management System?
Right. Well, I think last year at the Beach Races was probably the first event, and since that point there's been various events that have happened on the island.
Is that when people stood beside the rubbish and said, don't put that in there?
That's right, wearing those bright yellow T-shirts. And we're going to be the Waste Resource Trust has kind of taken on management of that role. So we will be helping people when they have events on to reduce as much waste going to landfill as possible and to, you know, increase the recycling. So there will be people at waste stations. There'll be plenty of opportunities to put your waste into different things. So you might put your plastic into one bag and then your paper into another, and you put your food waste into another, you put your cans into another, and then whatever's left might go into the rubbish bin. And the aim is really to just get what's going into the rubbish bin down as much as possible.
So with those events, do you also work with the organisers to reduce, you know, the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, but to do the reduce part?
Definitely. So we're going to be helping at the Beach Races, which is the biggest event on the island, and it's going to be quite a big effort to get that all happening. But we've been working with them for a few months now. Charlotte Parks, who's been a big, I think she probably was the Towards Zero Waste person for the last year, she has been working with the food vendors and encouraging them to use starch plates and, you know, non-bleached tissues and things like that. So all of the food vendors are on board. We're also working with the cafes. Charlie Farley's has agreed, I think, to do a 50-cent discount on reusable coffee cups for the day. So it's all part of encouraging people to use, you know, make wise choices about their waste, and if they can reuse it, to reuse it. If they can reduce it, that's even better. And definitely recycle before throwing it away.
Good stuff. And so this is kind of going out event by event to try to educate but also make a difference in the amount going into waste.
Yeah. So if anyone is running an event and they want to reduce their waste, they can get in touch with us and we'll try and help them as much as possible. We're setting up a kit at the moment which will include bins and signs and bags and T-shirts. And all they'll really need to do is provide volunteers, I hope, in the end. We're not quite at that point yet, but that will be ideally what
happens. I mean, that must be a bit of kudos as well for places if they can advertise as a zero waste event.
Definitely. It's so important these days, and more people expect it from event organisers. And so we are at the moment organising the Beach Races part of the, and we would love anyone who wants to come and help to do so. So they could get in touch with me or they could get in touch with Charlotte Parks if they know her. And it would just be a matter of wearing a T-shirt, standing by a station and telling people what to do with their waste.
Okay. How do they get hold of you?
I'm at the Waste Resource Trust Monday to Friday. So that's directly across from the library at Artworks and next to Waiheke Radio. And also they can call me on 372 2915 or email me on Daughter, which is D-O-R. @wrt.org.nz.
Okay, so you've got the Beach Races, you've got you're down at the Marae today.
Yep.
And
there's lots of other stuff happening as well. We're about to start a food waste project.
And you're looking for people to be involved with that?
We are. The food waste project will be, it's a pilot. What the aim of it is to get people to reduce the amount of food waste that they're actually making. So not even dealing with it properly, but reduce it before it becomes waste. And a local, you know, one of your radio She does the Everything Arts.
Yeah, Emma. Yeah.
Yeah. Emma Bo Warner, she's going to be running the show with running the program with me. It will be a 6-week program where for about an hour and a half a week we'll meet and we will go through various topics about food waste, things like portioning, shopping planning, and then the environmental consequences of food waste, the economic consequences of food waste, and we'll hopefully see a reduction in food waste of the people that are participating. So we're looking for about 6 to 8 households to be involved. We'd like a range of people. It doesn't matter how much food waste you make now, whether you don't think you make any, we'd still be interested in having you on board. Anyone who wants to be involved should get in touch. We do only have 6 to 8 places, but you know, we might run another one if it goes very, very well. So once again, just get in touch with me or Emma if you know her, or John also.
So, plenty going on. Good stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we're looking forward to the progress reports on that food waste project to see how
Indeed.
That goes. I mean, I think that's, I mean, it's remarkable actually how much you know, we've got a little bin on the bench there, and by the end of the day, it's always full. And,
I know. And Waiheke is better than most places. We do deal with our food waste much better than, so our levels in food waste in our rubbish are much less than, say, if you're living in Auckland. But the fact is, you're buying that food, and a lot of food miles have happened to get that food to your table, and then the really silly thing is you throw it out. In fact, you throw out a third of what you buy, which is huge in terms of, if you look at, you buy 3 bags of shopping, one of those bags of shopping is going to go in the rubbish, and that just doesn't make sense.
If only they'd make bread without crusts.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, carrots without tops.
Yes. Well, yeah, because you can buy the food without, you know, nicely packaged and all ready to go, but then there's the packaging side of that.
Oranges without skins.
Yes.
Pineapples without spikes. The future is rosy.
Oh, dear. Yes, indeed.
And you're going to teach us how to deal with all of those issues, aren't you?
I hope so. I'm going to try my very hardest.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Daughter.
Wonderful. See you soon.
Great. That's Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust. You'll find them in Artworks in Oniroa, and lots of fantastic information there and advice on what you can do to reduce your impact on the planet. You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Oniroa.